Dave Moore on Today FM.
Now, sitting across from me, apart from one of the handsomest men you'll ever lay eyes on, is one of the most exciting voices in Irish comedy. But here's the thing you didn't know about Peter McGann. Did you know that he's an expert on Uzbekistani football? So with the World Cup kicking off this evening, we decided we'd get him in to tell us all about the... You should see the fear across his face. For a second, he thought, like, oh my God, is he actually...
Yeah. Did I get the wrong brief?
No, you're not here to talk about Uzbekistani football or the World Cup, but I thought I'd just put the...
Dave, I had the opening night tonight. I'm still not recovering from you. You can't be pulling tricks like that on me.
That's fair. Okay, so this fella, if you don't know, before you were a comic, did you study acting?
No, I didn't.
You studied screenwriting?
Believe me, you can tell.
No, you can't.
I did film TV in college, but I was always doing a bit of acting here and there.
Yeah.
And I did a few plays when I got to Dublin and things like that. And now... I'm back doing a play.
You're back doing a play in the Abbey.
In the Abbey, a proper, big, like I feel proper now. I feel like
I'd say you do, and I'm glad you do because often, like, and you're joking about it there, but like people, particularly if they make waves in a certain way. So you've done it with comedy. Mm-hmm. You've done it with, you know, the online videos, stand-up comedy. There's a bit of imposter syndrome, I think, kicks in for the best of people at the best of times in situations where they find themselves on the stage of the Abbey, but like. Go for it. You know what I mean? Like, don't be worried about that stuff.
Oh no, completely. And I did feel like I was in great hands and with great people. And also, I was like, look, I've been on stage, being plays or like doing the stand up now for a while. I can't. I've no excuse to be too nervous or doubting myself.
Yeah, exactly. And when the offer comes or when the conversation begins, like, is it an agent talking to a director or a producer and then they start going, look, we'd love Peter to try out for this. Is it an audition process? What's the crack with that?
It's Barry in the Abbey, who's the casting man in the Abbey. He got onto my agent.
Right.
There was auditions going. So I did about two rounds of auditions and then got the part. But there was no way in hell I thought I was going to get the part.
Really?
Ah, yeah, come on. Even Annie, the director, she'll say it like she didn't even know I was an actor because she's like, oh, her sons had shown her videos.
Okay,
of mine.
Yeah.
So like she was like, oh yeah, this lad, you know, can he act from the waist down? You know, like it's not in vertical format. But
turns out you can.
Yeah, I was like, no, I've done plays before. Don't worry.
Okay, well, tell us about this then. This is the White-Headed Boy.
Yes.
So what's the story with this play? Because like, let's say there's a lot of people listening now who, like myself, don't know much about it.
Like myself until a few months ago.
Yeah.
It was written 110 years ago by Lennox Robinson, who was one of the main men in the Abbey, and it was put on in 1916, and now our version of it is set in the early 80s, like around 1970, so it's like the set is just incredible. It's like the good room of this family home. We're all dressed, like you can see my beautiful facial hair.
Yes, it is astounding.
Thank you. Finally someone said it. And like the costumes are incredible. It's basically a family comedy, or at least a comedy about a family.
Sure.
I wouldn't call it a family comedy. No, but
about a family, yeah.
It's about basically the White-Headed Boy, which is Dennis is the youngest son who everyone has put their stock in, and he's kind of gone off to Trinity to study to become a doctor.
Is he the favourite?
The favourite by a country mile. Claire Barrett plays the mother and she is dotes on him and she's kind of put all these expectations on him, and I'm the eldest sibling and I've kind of done something similar, and everything is kind of channeled into Dennis, and he has to be kind of the saviour of the family. He's what our reputation rests on, what our financial investment rests on, and he's just up in Dublin gambling on horses and
having the absolute
crack. Right. And then he comes home after failing another exam for the third time, and it all blows up. All the siblings kind of turn on him, and I make this very rash decision to banish him to Canada.
Oh wow.
Yeah, and it all goes pitong, but it's very funny.
Which is often the best way for a play in particular to go, because that kind of drama then lends itself to so many incredible scenes.
Completely.
And bits.
Then we have to try to get out of it. We realise we have to protect our reputation. There's other people with investment in Dennis of different kinds that come knocking
on the door, right.
And they've got maybe more power than us. And it's very, literally, the audiences have been laughing throughout it, but what I've really loved about it is like the big kind of twists and turns and like elevations of the story. People are
right, okay.
So it feels like we're doing a play back in the 20s or whenever.
And does it shift itself well from that early 1900s into the early 80s? Was there much work needed to be done, or is it just the set?
Such little work, I tell you, because you literally have There has been where Annie, the director, Annie Ryan, has done an amazing job with kind of bringing it, like, kind of getting rid of maybe some of the more troublesome elements.
Sure, of course.
But, and making, and kind of twisting that, like making kind of the way the women are treated in the original play, kind of making that a bit more pointed and ironic, and
right,
like,
yeah,
maybe cast a bit more judgment than Lennox Robinson was doing. But like, the themes of the show, like, it's a load of adult children living together under the one roof with their mother. There's emigration, there's financial straits, there's a lot
behavior.
Of things that resonate today.
Absolutely.
That he had written about over a century ago.
And how are you feeling now? Because opening night was Tuesday. You obviously had some kind of, you had a run in, you had a lot of rehearsals.
Yeah.
How are you coping with that type of kind of, I don't know, the regularity of what's happening?
I love it. I was obviously, you're a master of your own schedule for a lot of what I do, so it was lovely having the 9-to-5 thing where you go.
Someone else tell you at a certain
time.
Someone
else tell you where to go, be, what to do, where to stand, and then now it's up and running, and I appreciate having my own schedule back, and I also love, 6:30.
Time to get in. Yeah.
And then you're on stage by 7:30. Like, it's a beautiful feeling.
That's great. The good thing about the moustache, I think, is that in 2026, you know, there's a lot of lads walking around Drury Street, you know, the Liberties, who, you know, you don't get a place. Sometimes when someone grows facial hair, you're kind of going, oh, you're working. You could just be a cool dude.
I literally could be a cool dude.
Yeah.
Chance would be a fine thing. But no, I don't feel completely like I'm standing out with it.
Yeah.
The sideburns now, I don't know. That
it all suits you. I'll say that much. You know what I mean? Does that mean that you look like an 80s outfit? I don't know.
That's the aesthetic that has come back, genuinely.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, it works. Peter McGannis here, actor, comedian, internet personality, podcaster.
Yes, God.
Surely to God, sometime the podcast will come back.
It will. Look, I'm in talks with the guys.
Okay.
And let's just say there's some interesting developments occurring.
I look forward
Hopefully.
To it.
I'll have to meet some of the heads in here, and maybe they can help.
Yes, go loud and help you out.
They might throw us a bone again.
Come here. You have. So you said you studied film a lot. Like, you are a screenwriter. Like, this is not something that you're kind of just, oh, yeah, I'd like to be. Like, you're physically doing it right now, am I right?
Well, I mean, yeah, loads of people are doing it right now. For RT, that is, I mean, it's
they sign you up to
say
and say, don't tell anyone about anything about this, and I know it happens all the time.
I asked the production company Depp, but I was like, can they just, for my own dopamine hit of getting to announce it, can I just tell? And then they're like, yeah, I don't know. So there's a thing that
in the
not too distant future.
Would we see it on a screen in our house?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Well, that's exciting.
Maybe. I don't know. I know nothing. Maybe we will.
Maybe they will.
And then there's other, you know, it's all this stuff is so long. This other TV thing that is like, it's gone through the ringer so much, and it's after coming back around, and it's all very exciting, but like, the heartbreak it's caused, where you have these meetings with these cool people, and then it goes away, and then it comes back a few months later,
yeah,
and then you kind of it's a miserable existence, but it's a great one.
No, listen, and it is, I think, and you have to be almost like, when people, you know, have a calling to be a nurse or a teacher or whatever, I think writing is like that as well. Like, I've a friend of mine,
but more noble.
Oh, listen, massively. I mean, you're helping far more people by writing some kind of stupid comedy thing than you are if you're a nurse. But no, a friend of mine is writing something at the moment for film. Yeah. And it's gone through the thing where it's been like, ah, I don't know, I optioned the rights to this thing and now I don't know. Then, oh wait, massive celebrity star, Hollywood name attached. Oh no, he's gone. Yeah. Oh, production company's over here and they've got a million. Oh no, that's it. So it's like, you have to love it. You have to want to do it more than anything.
Completely.
It's so hard.
I've had that exact experience, and it's like, you think, even though you hear all the horror stories, like, well, it's going to be different for me.
Then
it just isn't. No. It isn't at all. And then you're like, well, I've heard, you know, you hear everything you hear about these type of people been snakes and schlevens, like,
these ones
seem so nice in the Zoom I had, and then it's like, you know,
and then they snake their way through the grass yet again. Oh no, look, it happens to everybody. I did see you In I've seen you in lots of bits recently, but in Power Ballad.
Oh yeah,
your wonderful cameo as a legal assistant.
Yes,
I was laughing. Like, listen, I love that movie so much. It was actually absolutely brilliant. I spoke to Paul Rudd about it not that long ago, and John Carney too. But I just think, like, things like that, you and Amy Huberman sitting there, like, it was just, it's brilliant casting, because it kind of smacks you in the face, but two comics like you guys doing that role was absolutely brilliant casting.
It really was. Like, when I found out it was Amy doing it, I was like, oh, this is going to be gas. And, like, it was so fun, like, the shoot, because the scene was longer than is in the film.
Yeah.
You know, hard to be shorter, I suppose. But so we were, and there was, the night before, I was like, I watched something Paul Rudd. I watched This Is 40, and which is like Paul Rudd at his most Paul Ruddian.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm obviously a massive fan or whatever. And so sitting across from him doing this scene, and he had this, like, it didn't make the final film, but he did this thing that was so Paul Rudd. And it caught me by, I was in there very professional. I was not going to laugh or anything like that. And then that just threw me so much, because it was like something out of Anchorman or any of those. And I just kind of corpsed whatever. And he saw that. And so every other take, he kept, like,
exaggerating that one.
It was just one line, one word. Sorry. Yeah. And it was just, I was in heaven. It was amazing.
And when you find yourself in those situations, like, I often interview these people and I kind of find it quite daunting sometimes, but like, when you're acting across from them, like, you're both your peers, effectively. You're both doing the thing.
Completely.
Like, are you stressing about that, or is it fine? Oh,
absolutely. Like, I had done the Chris O'Dowd showed the small town big story. So like that was like a crash course, and every day there was someone new that was your hero growing up or this, that, that.
Yeah.
So that was like a lovely crash course in that. But like, Paul Rudd is like so important to my kind of development as what I'm doing now or whatever.
Right.
So I was like kind of going into it, you can not be nervous, but then you just kind of survival kicks in, and you're just like, no, you're like, you're here. Don't think about it. Your brain tells your conscience not to think about it, and you're just going to do it. But like, you also want to appreciate it as well in the
and
moment.
And try and live in that moment.
Exactly, yeah.
And was he nice? I mean, was it kind of thing where like he's just kind of whisked in and out, or was he hanging around? No.
That's the thing. He was bang on, but also, and it was at the end of shoot, it was like the third last day of filming.
Right.
So I thought he was going to be, I thought they were all just going to be like,
exhausted.
We're at the end.
Coming out of a war zone.
Yeah. And they're like, what's this scene? The lawyer scene? Yeah, let's. But he was just so, you realise it's like the top tier racehorses, like these lads, like where he just knew it in his bones. He knew he could just turn it on like that. And he the scene just was elevated just by what he was doing in it. And he was so bang on. And like chatty between takes and all that. As I'm sure you were talking to touch, he loves Ireland.
Oh my God.
It was insane. He teared up at the premiere on stage talking about Joe Dottie. He gave him a honorary Irishman for any year. Like, this man is Ireland pilled. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So like, I just think he just loves being around. But he was a gent. He was like, it was like the dream.
Amazing. Right, well, look, as I said to you, make sure you do not miss Peter. He is going to be in the Abbey Theatre running until the 25th of July. The White-Headed Boy. It's going to be brilliant. Get your tickets. Do not miss it. Sell it out every night. Dude. Peter, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for being, Dave.
Appreciate it. I know how busy you are. I appreciate you taking the time.
Busy, man. Can I hang around after?
Yeah. Go out there and write yourself a podcast. Go on. It's Today FM.
Dave Moore on Today FM.
Wendy's new Biggie Deals lets you choose whatever you're in the mood for. It's like a music mixing board of deals, and you're the producer. Go with some chill folk music with a JBC in the $4 Biggie Bite snack. Try the drum and bass of deals with a double stack in the $6 Biggie Bag. Or go full-on sandwich symphony with an $8 Biggie Bundle, the grand finale of snacking. And the best part? They all come with napkins! $4, $6, and $8 Biggie Deals how you want them. At Wendy's.
Price and participation may vary. Single items at regular price. Prices may be higher in Alaska, California, and Hawaii.